Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast, hosted by author Michael DeCamp and his family. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch studios, this podcast explores anything related to creativity. You'll find interviews with creative people, such as authors, artists, and performers, as well as friendly banter about any number of topics. Turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast.
Hello.
I'm your
Who are you? Oscar the Grouch.
I'm Oscar the Grouch. I'm Mike DeCamp, your laryngitis-prone host. And I'm starting this off just so you know where I'm at, because we've done three podcasts this weekend. And the second one, I didn't say much, and I'm about done speaking.
About done speaking now.
So I'm going to turn this over to my beautiful, wonderful co-host, Nancy DeCamp.
Hello, thank you, Nancy. Mike. Hello, and thank you. And it's been fun for him to have laryngitis, because I'm like, one of the best ways to get over laryngitis is don't talk. So I've been able to legally say, be quiet, shut up, don't talk. Anyways, we are here in the Cutter's Notch studio with guests, Grant and Caitlin Steckbeck. Welcome.
Hello. Hi.
So I'm so excited to talk to them, and I think you're going to be excited to hear about what they do and their creative pursuits and connections. But to start off with, we'll talk about our creative pursuits as we do with every podcast. So Caitlin, you have anything you've been digging lately?
Well, so I recently reread the Shadow and Bone series The Six of Crows. Well, then we've been kind of intertwining in the seasons on Netflix, and they're very, very different.
They are,
you know, surprise, you'll find out here in a second, I teach high school theater. So my students, it's like young adult books. And so it's interesting to have them like share like, oh yeah, they're so different, but the author knew that. And it's like this whole completely different concept of the story. And so it's interesting to see how they would take two completely different stories and then mash them together to then also be put on Netflix and then has to be written for like TV. So there's cliffhangers. I'm like, but there's not supposed to be a cliffhanger. Like right. There's an answer. And so, yeah, that's kind of what's entertaining me, but also like grinding my gears a little bit of like,
so are you not a fan of the Netflix?
I've just now started The Six of Crows, so I don't even know what's right or wrong. And as I'm reading through the book, I'm like, oh, that's not how I played out on Netflix, you know, but so I was just more of like, I'm a happy and put it in a bow. Like I just like to know the ending. And if you've watched the end of season two, it's just like, oh, wow. They just like threw that all together and then left some things open. And I'm just like, I am so unsatisfied. But it's also to like hopefully come back for a season three. And of course, I'll sit there and watch the whole thing and all over again. And I'm just a victim to
I do think they're capturing the essence.
Mm-hmm.
But it is frustrating. I tend to be books are better than show kind of person. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times the shows can capture the kind of the essence. Because even like we were talking before we got online a little bit about the Outlander series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've read the books, love them. And there's so many layers to it. There's no way to capture all of that within the series. I think they capture the essence of the characters and storyline within that Outlander show. But
then it's also just kind of this like question of like, well, it's not my story to then say how it should be on film. And apparently, according to the teenagers, that like, oh no, the author knew. And she's like one of the producers and she's like seeing it as this like adaptive version of her story. So I'm like, you know, just go along for the ride.
Go along for the ride. So whether you like to read or you like to watch. I'm with you. I like the Shadow and Bone series.
Never going to be perfect. I mean, I'm from the Harry Potter generation. Like if I sat here and nitpicked every single thing that should have been in the movie, like I won't make it past tomorrow, you know, like it's just the essence of the adaptation. So
good.
I am.
Grant.
Yeah.
What have you been indulging in lately that cared to share with us?
A whole bunch of stuff. I guess it kind of going off of what you guys are talking about with Shadow and Bone, like the idea of book to film or book to TV. I've been, I recently read, both of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World books with Michael Crichton. I mean, huge fan of the movie, the OG Jurassic Park. And then, you know, with the Jurassic World's coming out and everything. I was like, oh man, let's read that. There's a series on Netflix that's like the movies that made us. And I was watching the Jurassic Park episode on that. And I was like, this is great. And they kept talking about the book and how the adaptation was going. And I was like, I'm going to, so I just on a whim, I ordered the book or both the books and then read them and was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So much fun. And so I've been telling everybody, I'm like, just read these books. Cause they're so cool. Like, I mean, and there's, they're, you can see similarities between like the film, the movie and everything, but the film and the book, but the drastically different within the two of them.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's so cool to see them and see like literal lines that are in the book that are like just chapter starters, just little things that are just little like pithy quotes that Ian Malcolm's character has that start off a chapter are lines in the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's so cool. But then recently we were actually on the car ride over here. We were talking about, we just finished a show called Jury Duty on
really
it's on Amazon, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the premise is wackadoodle. It's insane. It's like this reality TV show, except that everyone around it is an actor. And there's one person who is a real person who thinks they're there filming a documentary about jury duty.
Oh,
and there's everyone else, all the other members of the jury, the judge, the plaintiff, the defendant, the lawyers, literally at all the court workers, the bailiff, everyone is an actor, and it's all,
and they're prescribed in the script and everything.
Yes. It's a script and they're just kind of, and they're improvising and adjusting and changing based off of this one person who is not an actor, who is just there like volunteer.
So what was it, a Craigslist that ad? Jim Carrey show that was
they've
done
been calling
years
it
ago.
Like the Real Life Truman Show.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I think that sounds like that same kind of concept.
And yeah. Not only are they all actors, but it takes place in California. And James Marsden, the actor, plays James Marsden, the actor. And so he walks around with like scripts that say like confidential. And he'll be like, oh, I can't tell you though. And he reads like, can't tell you though. Like it's so. And
this, this is on what?
It's on Amazon.
And it's just Amazon. A light. Yeah. They're like 25 minute episodes. It's just like stupid, fun, it's silly
so,
TV.
It's so much fun though. And then, it just like eventually it gets revealed. I mean, you know about it at the first episode. They have a little like tag that's like, oh, only nothing is real. All everyone's an actor and doing all this. And you're just like, what the hell is going on? And I'm just, it was so fun just to watch it and see like his reaction. I mean, the guy is like a genuinely nice person and like really is, it's just so funny that like his reactions to things, everyone is like, he's the best. Apparently he's still friends with the cast and everything. Like they, at the end of it, they have like these tags where like after filming and after everything, they would go out and do social engagements with everybody. And like, they would just go hang out. He would go hang out with James Marsden and just like go do this. And it was just really funny.
We'll have to check that one out, Mike.
Yeah.
We'll check it out.
That's on my list now.
Kaylin, compared it to what was it? The, is it Cake? Have you guys seen that?
No.
Oh. Another stupid Netflix.
It's
literally
dumb.
Just like master cake makers and they can do all these crazy designs.
Yeah.
And it's from like afar, like 10 feet away. And people have to like figure out, is this a trash can or is it a cake? And it's just silly, funny, like, you know, with, you just need something light on your brain.
I think they're both kind of COVID-esque shows.
Yeah.
Like, they both kind of stem from that era in like film entertainment, but they're also just both so, I don't know, uplifting, fun. Like there's no stakes. Like it's not like the world's not going to collapse.
You
just watch it just to like,
just entertain.
We're just going to enjoy.
I had shared earlier on a previous podcast that Young and Old Enough. Have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
It's like they're like maybe episodes are like 15 minutes long. They're Japanese and they send their little kids, like 2-year-olds, on an errand. Like they got to go 4 blocks away, cross a busy street to go to the store to get the fish and then stop by dad's work to give him his apron at the sushi place and make his way back. It is both terrifying and thrilling at the same time. It's on Netflix.
3 years old?
Like 2 years old, 3 years old.
4 or 5.
At the most. Not 5 at the most.
You saying that, I think I've seen like a video before that they were like, no, this is like Asian. And
it's, don't they do that.
This, but it's like, no, we all look out for the children. Like if you see a 5 year old get on the subway, like you kind of keep your eye, like make sure that they're good. True. And they go on. Yeah. And then it's just kind of like.
A friend of mine, he married a woman who grew up and she's Japanese, grew up in Japan. He says, no, they do that kind of thing. And I was like, wow.
Where like in America, that's how all the kids got kidnapped in the '70s and the '80s. It's like, oh, you're 4. You can walk to kindergarten now, you know?
Yeah.
And now we don't do that anymore.
We don't do that anymore.
And you get the walking uphill both ways.
Right.
Well, one episode I saw, this poor kid, he had to go to the grocery store for his mom. And to get there, he had to walk down this incredibly steep hill. God. And he got all the way, and he got all the stuff. And he's like,
he's got loaded these bags,
including apples and things like that. And he gets about 3/4 of the way up and the bag breaks.
And he's running down the hill to pick up all the pieces.
It was, I was like, oh, this is just,
it's like
wrong.
A car wreck. You can't look away when you watch.
I was like,
you
know? I just picture myself just like holding my face. Like, oh no.
Check it out. Well, I'll say most recently, my creative indulgence is I read a book called If a Poem Could Live and Breathe by Mary Calvey. And what it's about is Theodore Roosevelt and his first wife, because they found actual love letters that they wrote back and forth to each other through their meeting and courtship. And so she intertwines it. So it's a historical fiction. So there are things in it that's true and things in it that she speculated, but it was fascinating. I mean, he was a bigger than life character just in and of himself, but to step back and see the relationship he had with his first wife and their love letters. And, you know, she was how supportive he was really to women's rights. And a lot of it was because of her influence and that kind of thing. So
that's cool.
It was interesting. So Mike, your creative indulgence, we won't share.
Why?
Because you can't.
I can try.
Well, go ahead.
It looks like he
wants. You got 30
to.
Seconds. Go.
All right. So I started watching a show on Netflix called Night Agent.
I've seen like a preview. I can picture it.
The premise is that there's this FBI agent who gets a job working in the White House. But his job in the White House is to sit at night, all night long, in this basement room with a phone. And people who are spies, if they run into a problem, call that line and he answers and he helps deal with it. And his one night he gets a call from this young girl, young woman, whose aunt and uncle were getting killed. And they told her to call this number and give a code. And so the rest of the series is him trying to help her and solve the mystery, and it's intrigue and spy stuff in the White House. And it's pretty good show. So I'd recommend Night Agent.
Night on Agent.
Yeah.
All right.
Good show. Thanks for letting me share that, Nancy.
You're welcome.
I will crawl back into my
laryngitis. Go back to your little laryngitis hole. Go be quiet.
Get your one share in. You're done.
So Grant and Caitlin are here, and I will confess, we've known Grant for years and years. I think you met our oldest daughter about junior high. You guys hit school together.
Yes.
Right around that time frame.
Swimming is when we first met. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was started about 6th, 7th grade, something like that. So I've known you for years and know your parents, and we were always at all the events. And
so I was going to say, I was like, your family's been going to my dad's for dentist.
Yes. Your dad keeps me together for all the work that I didn't do when I was a kid. He's repatching it now that I'm older. So known each other for years. And we wanted to talk to you because you and your wife are both high school drama teachers, correct?
Yes.
So I'm referring to you as the dueling drama teachers.
Dueling drama.
For how like competitive and intense high school theater is.
But so let's just take a second. Grant, I've known you. Excited to meet you and get to know you, Caitlin. Yeah. But I want you to tell me a little bit about yourselves and what you do in that role.
My name is Caitlin. My maiden name is Spires. I grew up in Northwest Indiana, in Maryville, Indiana. Started doing community theater when I was in 5th grade. I have a very core memory, you know, from Inside Out, of like my dad saying to me, oh, you know, I think you'd be really good at doing this like community theater show, which I think like looking back on it, is like, you're just obnoxious and we're going to like channel your theater kid energy into something. The so there's a huge, there's a very big community theater group that's actually out of my high school that's been doing it for like 30, 40, 50 years at this point.
Yeah.
So that's how I started in high school theater. And then I went to the University of Indianapolis for theater education and then just stayed in the area. Worked middle school for 2 years. I have an English license too. And did after school, middle school theater, which is an adventure in and of itself.
Anything with middle schoolers deserves a medal of honor.
So many good stories. I should like, people think like high schoolers are great. I'm like, no, middle schoolers is where like the fun, like one-off quotes are. But, and then through high school, and then now as I teach, I was 2 years in middle school in Wayne Township. And then I did a year at Franklin Central with my friend from college. I was his assistant. Just part-time when I was finishing my master's.
You say that like it was a sentence. Huh. Like I did.
You did your time.
Seeing and then I did.
Have you seen the state of teaching recently?
Yeah, I was an RA for 3 years and then I taught middle school at Wayne Township for 2 years. And it's like, nothing surprises me anymore.
Right,
like there's
right.
no, like I'm just so hardened by life.
Put through the ringer.
And then I went to Avon and I've been teaching at Avon for 7 years.
Okay.
So, and then volunteer, I was an Indiana thespian. Volunteer for Indiana Thespians, and then that's how I met Grant, is we both volunteer together for the Indiana Thespians organization. It's like the National Honor Society.
I got a card.
Oh, yeah?
I have a thespian card.
Yeah, yeah. It's been around for a long time, so.
Well, you didn't need to say that, but.
Oh, well, I mean.
Nancy, you've been around a long time. Right.
We were just inducted yesterday.
Yeah, yes, she's an honorary thespian. At the ripe age of 32, she is here today, everyone. But yeah, I make the joke that Grant was the last single straight male theater teacher that I was never going to find anybody else to date. So like, here we are. We date now, and it actually worked out. So,
actually,
look at that.
It's wild.
There you go.
Surprise.
So Grant, because I know that you've not always been where you're at right now.
Oh, no.
Either.
I've been all over the state. Kind of, I'm moving my way up north, slowly but surely. Caitlin's my north, north gal.
Your north star.
Yeah, my north star.
Gross.
So, yeah, I graduated from Ball State with a degree
in
theater ed. Yeah, really. Yeah. Chirp. And so I started out at Silver Creek High School down in Sellersburg. It's about 10 miles north of Louisville. Mm-hmm. And then I taught there for 4 years and then got a job teaching at Bloomington High School North.
Okay.
And I taught there for 5 years. And then this last June, actually on my birthday, officially, I was offered the job last year. June 1st, I have been teaching theater and film at Carmel High School.
Okay. So you've been there right about a year.
Almost exactly a year. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. But you met through.
Yes.
During your volunteer work.
Yeah. Yes. We met through Indiana Thespians. I had already been it's called the State Thespian Officers. It's the student board. I'd been their advisor for, about a year or two at that point, co-advisor. And then the other co-advisor was bowing out. She was moving to Wisconsin, I believe. And so at that point, I was like, our chapter director, like, basically through Caitlin, was like, hey, here, go. And like, it was like, here's Caitlin, let's do this. And so Caitlin brought fantastic energy to the State Thespian Officers and everything and revamped everything. And from that, I remember our first state conference together. We really didn't leave each other's side pretty much the whole state conference.
Yeah.
And then it's just kind of like, are we dating now?
Yeah. What's happening? Are we Facebook official?
Yeah. She texted me. She goes, so sup.
Yeah. Like, you get to a certain age, you're just like, I don't have time.
I know.
I don't need a new friend. Like, I feel like this was a thing. Yeah, but if it wasn't, it isn't.
I have a couple daughters. I know the drill, right?
Yeah. Good luck if you're out there, right? Single and dating. Right. God bless you.
So when did your interest in drama start? So we did, Caitlin talked about the, you know, the community theater and such.
I took a different path. So I never really did. I guess second grade was the first show I was in, but it was like, you know, some.
Yeah. Yeah. Farmer in the Dell, whatever.
Adaptation of like the Three Little Pigs and the Big Bad Wolf. And I played the Big Bad Wolf.
Oh, there you go.
So that was fun. I mean, I had a great time. Like I remember, I still remember it like being like a really, really good time and having a lot of fun. So, that just kind of stuck with me. And then through scouts, I'm an Eagle Scout. I was doing scouts all through, just growing up basically. And so like we can't constantly be doing campfire skits and different stuff like that. And that was the part that I really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah.
And so we hit eighth grade and I remember sitting in the math classroom and like going through doing our scheduling stuff for high school. And I saw theater on there. I was like, yeah, let's do this.
Let's give that a try.
Mm-hmm. And so I took the class, loved it. Tried to audition for a show, and didn't really get a chance to audition. I ended up having like 104 degree temperature.
Oh no.
The day of auditions.
This isn't going to happen. Yeah.
Oh, it was bad. So I was just like, oh God, I'm so sick. I can't, I want to go up there. Let's do it. And then my right hand had to go. So I was like, all right, cool, whatever. And then next year, I auditioned for Grease. Uh-huh. And my first role officially on the Pines was Eugene in Grease, which in the stage show and the musical is way bigger of a part. In the movie, he's got like two lines and he runs off and you never see him again.
Right.
In the stage show, you start out the show with a monologue.
Right.
That is about a page long. And I was like, oh, I've never been in a show before. This is cool.
This is a little different than that campfire skit, huh?
Yeah, it was a bit different. But the seniors took me under the wing and like it was a really good experience. And then from there I just kept going. And then I knew I wanted to be a teacher. Like from fourth grade on, when I helped teach some special needs kindergartners and first graders how to read.
Right.
I was like, oh, I want to be a teacher.
This is what I want to do.
I want to be a teacher. And so for the longest time up until I hit junior year high school, I was like, I'm going to be a history teacher. And that, you know, because I really enjoy history. So I was like, this will be great. It'll be fine. And then I was like, oh, wait. I was literally sitting in theater class going like, oh,
I could.
This is a class. I could do this. And then immediately I was like, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at.
I seem to recall seeing your acting abilities in some short films.
Oh God. Not the short films.
Yes.
I think one of the first times I saw the short film though, I was like, so if you want me to stay attracted to you, I need these to like not be a normal thing. Like they are just like raw. Let's just put it that way. They're some all right.
Those are
you sober?
Right. That's scary if you are. And you were, right? Oh,
yeah. Worst news.
I mean, you know, we did some wild stuff in high school, but that was still, yeah, no, we were just hanging out. So I believe a guest you've had on the podcast before.
Yes.
Aaron Beal.
I've known him for years. He and I were in Little League together.
Dr. Mulray. Is that who you mean? Aaron Beal, Dr. Moore.
Oh, that's Dr. with Mulray. Us with the, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen those too. Yeah, the Celestial Misconduct.
Yes, Celestial Misconduct stuff.
I am all for supporting like friends and their endeavors and stuff. But we watched like that first one all the way through. And I said to Grant, I think I said something like, I've never done acid before, but I feel like this isn't too far off, but like I really support Beal and like all of these things.
Right.
Yes, you made this thing. You did it. It looks really good. I don't totally know what's going on, but that's okay. It's not. I don't even know.
That's all right though.
It's
because
up there with Shadow and Bone. It's not Mike, my story.
Mike is like I shared. Mike has written some books. Has some published books. I think he has written well. I think that his writing has improved with each novel. They're not my cup of tea. Now I read them. I support him, and a lot of people really love what he's written. But so, yeah, to your point, yes, support Beal, support this and that. And yeah,
she's very supportive. you know, when she doesn't punch me in the throat, give me laryngitis.
Stop. Stop. Blink twice if you need help. We'll call Angela.
We'll call you. Yeah. That's, yeah. No, Beale, I've always been a big, big fan of Beale's as far as like his, I mean, his acting is fantastic and he's got a really good eye too. So it's a lot of fun to watch him work. Like the Mulray, Dr. Mulray.
Right.
Great character. Also, though, not my cup of tea.
Right,
like
right.
So, I literally, I remember him sending me the stuff, and I was like, dude, I like, love it. I like that you're sending me the stuff. Please keep sending me the stuff. But I can't, I it's not my interest. It's
yeah, not,
my,
not your genre. Yeah, not my genre, the, not my yeah, the so, things, yeah.
But he's one of those people that is just so naturally funny.
Yeah,
and like, so I mean, yeah, he could.
I wish
like,
I had a nickel for every story I know or have heard about him. And I know that's just a scratch of the surface, you know, because there's so many things you don't come home and tell your mom, right?
Yeah. And I hope that this, you know, maybe he doesn't listen to this episode, but I'm like, I can't think. I mean, he can do the meanest thing to me, you know, and I would still be like, oh, that's okay. Like, you're so funny. Like how he would tell me like, well, I set your house on fire. You know, I'll be like, well, you know, like he's just so lovable. Yeah. He's so funny.
For him and his whole family. We're like, we're kindred spirits.
For listeners out there. Just go back.
Few episodes. It was January, I think.
8 or 9 episodes. We recorded him through the holidays.
December.
Yeah.
Because then everyone came over to our house.
That's right. They came to the party, then moved to your house afterwards. So.
And that's where I met Angela. And it was like, hi, I'm Angela. My parents have a podcast and there's cider and there's all these things. I'm like, okay.
Great. So cool. It's well, and it's fun to see. So you guys met, I mean, Angela met Aaron in elementary school, mm-hmm. you know, they were playing on the playground together and then junior high, but to see the group of friends that you have and how you've all gone your own ways and found your interests, but yet it's still so supportive of each other. Right. Yeah, yeah. I think it's cool to have those kinds of friendships. Right.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Right. Well, that's, I mean, like Beale, he and I, you know, we were in Little League together. Our dads both coached, and then we never saw each other again after Little, like we didn't see each other for the longest time. And then like junior year of high school, we found one another again. It was like, oh yeah. And then we just became really good friends from there.
Yeah.
And like really founded our, like he was my best man in the wedding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like from there we started making movies together mm-hmm. and doing a lot of creative endeavors and, you know, and then from high school we went and we were room I was for the longest time I was the de facto roommate in his house in the house he lived in for a long time and then literally like senior year I became an actual roommate.
You came an honorary Beale.
Yeah, I actually lived there. So, but I mean, like,
name we were was on the rental agreement, yeah, really, on the contract.
Yeah, that at that point it was, but like I mean we've been friends for a long time.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. So Caitlin, did you always want to teach?
I think I always knew I wanted to do something with people. So whether it be teaching or something like social work or like helping people, it's kind of funny hearing Grant say like, I realized that in class. I also talk about core memory unlocked. I was like our state thespian officers. I was one in high school. Like I had a very active thespian troop. And we did our big state conferences, like the big kind of culmination of the year. And all 4 years when I was in school, it was hosted at the University of Indianapolis. And well, so I was there helping run the conference because I was essentially like on the board. And I remember being backstage and just kind of like being like, I think I could do this. Like, I think this would be like, I could just keep doing this mm-hmm. forever. Mm-hmm. And then turns out UND is like one of the few schools that had a theater ed program at the time. And I applied at the beginning of my senior year. And I think Grant and I are kind of the few people in the world that where we applied for college, what we put on our applications, it's like 17 years old, is what we actually did, graduated with, and what we still do is on my application.
That doesn't happen very often.
Fall 2008 to UND was theater ed.
Yeah.
And I'm still a theater teacher. So we agree that it's a good thing we met later in life because my backup choice was Ball State. His backup choice was UND. So like we were like ships in the night.
Yeah.
And we're like, thank God we didn't meet in college. So like I mean I was an RA for 3 years and he was like
a bit of a
putting
wrestling.
I was a
theater major. I mean, I don't know what you want from me here.
So it's a good thing like I calmed down and he like grew up, no offense. And
He grew up?
Yeah, well, he grew out of his mom's house into my house.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I grew up.
You know, so what are your responsibilities as a drama teacher? Because it's more than just class, right?
So the crazy thing with Indiana and theater and just pretty much arts education anywhere is like it is completely different at every single school. Like what classes you teach, what content you teach, what you do after school. Do you go on field trips? Like it's wild that my job will not be, you know, at Avon is not the same at Brownsburg or Plainfield or, you know, compared to Carmel. So I am a lone wolf. I just now got this year a technical director. So somebody who runs the auditorium and build sets and stuff. But in regards to teaching, I teach all the theater classes. I have 6 different classes that I teach at various times throughout the year. And then I do a fall musical, a winter show or showcase, something, just keep the kids at essentially don't do show choir, like keeping them entertained. And then like the traditional spring play. And then volunteer for thespians, take kids to different conferences with that. But yeah, so I am my own department, essentially. Like I'm in the performing arts department, but I don't lesson plan with anybody. I don't have to really keep up with somebody else because we're doing, be doing the same thing, which has its challenges, but it's also like really
kinda
nice
that I get to like show,
do my own thing and like not have to really answer to anybody or explain it to anybody. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I've been doing at Avon, finishing up my 7th year there. So there is the technical director now, but his job is more focused on like the facilities and building and things like that. So,
okay.
But yeah.
Ours is a little different at Carmel. We have, I am the only full-time theater teacher, but I also am, my official title is director of theater and film. And so I, Basically, I teach all of our international baccalaureate film classes at Carmel. And then I teach one of the sections of theater arts, like the intro class. Mm-hmm. And then I co-teach with my co-teacher, Maggie Cassidy, who's been there for, I think at this point, 18 years, 19 years. Mm-hmm. And she's part-time, though. She's got 3 kids at home that she's raising and everything. So she's we're on a block schedule. So she's there every other day.
Okay.
But we co-teach, we call it rep theater, but it's IB theater combined with advanced acting and theater production and all a bunch of different theater classes combined into one that is under the umbrella of rep theater. We also have a technical director, Andrew Okerson, who's fantastic, amazing, amazing. And like does a really great job with like just working with everyone.
Yeah.
And so like I am very fortunate in that regard. We actually just had, we called it our theater director retreat. But we basically just went over to Maggie's house and sat down and we're like, all right, we're gonna plan out this next year, get all of our dates together, get everything, like figure out kind of like our plan for the future, figure out our shows, what we want to do next year.
Because you have to like apply to get
you have to apply for rights. And then if there's a professional theater doing them somewhere near you, sometimes those rights are restricted.
It's either like you get an email back in an hour that's like, congratulations, you can do this show. Truly. You owe us $4,000. Or it's like, well, and then it's like a week's drawn out process. Like,
so here's the thing.
You just sign this contract and send in an vital organ. And yeah.
But sometimes it ends up like if it's a professional theater, they'll buy out the rights within like a 100-mile radius or something.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's like our like patron base is completely different from what you guys are doing.
Right.
Like,
we are really worried about high school.
Don't get me wrong. I think our kids work really hard, but I don't think anybody's going to be like, well, you know, we could go see the Broadway tour of Little Mermaid, but nah, let's go see that at Avon High School. Like, unless you're taking like your 5-year-old, like, niece, it doesn't know the difference, but then it's like, I don't know what world you live in.
Competitive issue.
I was like, thank you though for thinking it.
We had that problem once when I was down in Sellersburg, where we wanted to do Legally Blonde, and a local theater company down there, Derby Dinner Playhouse, had gotten the rights, but they were going to do it like a year after us, and they had blocked off the rights. I mean, that's the thing you can pay for, and they blocked off the rights and did that. And so, like, when we went to apply for the rights for the show, it flagged back, and they were like, do that. We're like, whoa. It's like almost a year beforehand.
Right.
We're a high school. Now, granted, like, geographically, we're in the same area. Yeah. But you're also so dealing close with, like, 10 other high schools that have theater programs, plus community theaters, plus other stages and stuff that are in that area, as far as, like, people getting pulled in directions here and there. They're always going to be pulled.
Yeah.
And so eventually they gave us the rights to it. They were like, yeah, no, you're right.
Well, that's interesting, because if another high school requests, like, the week before you, you're just kind of, oh, well, can't have it this
my
time.
My first musical at Avon, I did Addams Family the same exact weekend as Brownsburg High School, which is just north, for those of you that know. Throw a rock and hit Brownsburg.
So it doesn't matter at that point.
At that point, we're non-professional rights. It's more the professional rights.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that same sort of thing we did down in Salzburg, we did Les Mis, and, like, either the same weekend or a weekend or two prior, one of the Catholic schools in the area of Providence did Les Mis as well.
Yeah.
And I think it ended up to where, like, they could come to ours, but we can go to theirs just based on our tech weeks and everything.
Huh.
But it was, same sort of thing where it's like, yeah, when it comes to non-professional rights, as for, like, high school shows or community theaters, they're
just
like,
go for it.
Yeah, whatever. But yeah. if it takes away from the professional theaters, then you've got an issue.
Then you've got an issue.
Yeah.
It's like a whole, I don't even know. Like, they talk about, like, the Facebook algorithm. Like, I don't know what the algorithm is like how you can get things and not get things. And, you know, I had a similar issue with, like, royalties and stuff when I was in college doing a student directed show. So I've always just kind of gotten the practice of, like, I announce what the next season is at our banquet, and I pay for all the royalties then, just so I know for sure we're solid, we're good to go. Well, years ago, probably 5-ish years ago, I announced that we were going to do both versions of Neil Simon's The Odd Couple at the same time, because it's all the same set and it's the same story. They just gender flip, whatever. Fast. And I paid for all the royalties. Fast forward however many months, Neil Simon passed away. Well, I guess there was some discrepancy on who owned the royalties and stuff. So it was frozen. His estate, like, froze it all. And so many people were saying, we can't get the royalties to these shows. Like, we can't, they're going back to pay their bill. And I'm like, I already got a contract. I paid for it. And they never contacted me saying, like, we reinvoke, because I had already paid it
when
he was alive.
Yeah.
But I could perform 4 in the spring. And just randomly, all the times I'm, like, so precautious about it, that one really worked out, because we really didn't have anybody else doing Neil Simon that spring.
Well, and I think the thing that's interesting, as we talk to authors, actors, musicians, and, you know, you guys, there's so much to the specific business.
Mm-hmm.
That the average person just has no clue.
Well, is big. Well, Carmel's too, but big into, like, marching band world, show choir world. Those are, like, huge hits, because it's not the same audience culture.
Right.
Where they're shouting, they're screaming, they're yelling, they're filming, blah, blah, blah. And how many things are getting taken down because you're filming, you know, the Avon, you know, band show or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they've already paid all these royalties to all these different songs that they've composed, all, you know. So somebody's now
intellectual property.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, especially in marching band world, because it is, you know, the grand nationals that they host.
Right.
You can only watch them live if you're paying for access to the streaming service. I mean, I don't think they're hunting down everybody in their cell phone footage, but, like, you can't post it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It gets flagged and it gets taken down because that's copyright infringement, they only pay to play that show live in this moment, not for it to, like, exist
for eternity.
Yeah. And so I think eventually, you know, there's all these legalities, but, like, all their shows were getting taken down because, well, we never agreed that you could stream it, you know, universally on little Bobby's dad's iPad. That he's,
like, the first time that happened. And they're like, oh, wait, this is a thing, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's the best thing about working with high school students?
I like their resilience. Like, every school I've been at, every high schooler I've worked with, there is a certain level of resilience within them that is admirable. And I just really enjoy how they just fully throw themselves at the work a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, we'll figure it out. And then we get to a day where it's like, okay, we got to figure this stuff out. And they're like, yeah, we'll do it. We'll find a way to get it done. on the flip side of that, sometimes they get a little too complacent within that. So
they wait till the last minute, okay, stop.
I find that really fun to work with them as like young artists. I had a professor in college who was just like, high schoolers can't do Shakespeare. And I was like, that is BS. Like, high schoolers very much can do Shakespeare, but they do need guidance in order to do it.
Right.
So it's just kind of that, like, how much time are you willing to spend to help them do Shakespeare?
Which is wild because Shakespeare was literally written for like 12-year-old boys to play girls. Yeah, but we're worried about actual 17-year-old girls.
Yeah.
Written for older people.
Do you feel like with each class that comes through, that there's one or two students that are just particularly bent toward acting or playing a part or playing a role? I mean, I think back when I was in school and also just watching the kids as my girls went through school, it just seemed like there were certain characters, certain people that were particularly bent toward performance. Whether or not they're in the drama class or not, they're bent toward performance. Do you think that's true?
More or less. I would say that it's more so nowadays, as far as like, it's not just one or two, but there are a lot of kids have been doing theater for a long time by the time they get to high school, whether it's through middle school, through community programs, whatever that may be. They've been doing it, and that's something that they really enjoy. They kind of, it's part of their personality. It's part of who they are. And so it's kind of, they develop this like vision of, this is who I am, and this is what, like, I can't see myself doing anything else. So I know we've got at least three or four of our seniors graduating this year at Carmel are going into theater to study theater. Now, whether they continue with that and only do theater, that is what it is.
But, yeah.
Like going into college, that's what they are declaring as their majors. And that's what they're starting with. So like, and that's a pretty standard number. Sometimes it's more, it depends on the school and on like who's helping to guide them. But yeah, like, I would say that is a pretty accurate thing, is that people like tend to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say too, there's just so many more options with theater. I mean, I think even like our generation was like, okay, so I'm in Indiana and then I need to be in Broadway. Like, we just jump straight to like at the top. Yeah. Yeah. And so many of my students that are just like torn of like, I want to keep theater in my life somehow, but I don't know how, and blah, blah, blah. I'm always just like, get thee to arts admin. Like, I have a student that went to IU, start off as like nursing, and I'm like, okay, like, you're going to be a nurse. Like, there's no way. There's absolutely no way. And then he eventually switched over to arts administration. It's like, yeah, and then I can be in shows and I can act, and then I can also work with a business during the day. And so they're able to like see the value of having theater without it having to necessarily be like their number career. Pays all the bills, which I think you can find any sort of professional theater actor and they'd be like, wait, theater is supposed to pay all the bills? Like, no one does. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, even the Broadway stars are budgeting and taking the subway and you have no idea that they're on their way to Broadway, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's just a lot more options for kids that even if they don't go get a degree or essentially do more after high school, that they can still be involved one way or another, or at least be, you know, active participants and audience members for the local area theaters, you know?
Well, and I will say, I work in public accounting. I love to hire someone who is extremely creative because they need to be able to follow the rules because there's compliance when it comes to audits and tax returns and that kind of thing.
Just a little bit.
but they're the ones that are going to think outside the box, right? They're going to find the solution to what we need to a situation, figure out a way to do it. So that's one of the areas where I really love seeing people who have that creative bent or that performance, the ability, I'm not afraid, I'll stand up and give this presentation or what have you.
That's like, that seems like one of the more marketable skills from people. And that's part
and years
of how,
ago,
like,
you never would have thought that, right?
Yeah, that's part of how you can like market, as far as like some, like, I have kids who take the intro to theater class just because like I need to learn how to be more outgoing or learn how to be more
express, articulate.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, and it's so cool to see kids do that. Like, you know, we go to like the International Thespian Festival where it's like 6,000 kids who are sitting, you know, in these massive, huge auditoriums watching a high school musical. And there's some 17-year-old girl standing on stage singing to 4,000 kids at a time, mm-hmm. her peers just up there singing her little heart out, you know, or like, you know, marching band again, kids standing there literally on top of a scaffold playing the trumpet Lucas Oil Stadium. Yeah, and it's this is most people's actual nightmare. And you're like, yeah, I got this. And they just go and they do it. And it's like, I can't imagine they're like nervous in a job interview after that. Like, I just have to chat with you for 20 minutes. Yeah.
I got this.
Sometimes they are though. Some kids are so...
They get in their head.
So way more comfortable being somebody else on stage and mm-hmm. singing and dancing and acting. But as soon as they have to be themselves, they're just like, well, I just like retreat inside themselves. But
so just to take a step back, in case there are some listeners out there that don't know, what's a thespian?
Well, back in the day,
theater.
A thespian is a term that you refer to as like a theater practitioner. It comes from Thespis, who is widely considered to be the first actor who stepped out of the Greek chorus.
I was gonna say, like in his toga at the you know, stone theater in the Greece.
Like back in the days of the, you know, festivals of Dionysus and all that jazz. But
doing like 5-hour plays for fun.
Yeah.
Because they had nothing else to do.
A series of, the day long festivals of like it crazy. It's named after the first actor Thespis. And so the thespians is a term that is used to identify a theater practitioner in general. And it can be more than, it's not just an actor. A thespian is, you know, you can be a technician, you could be a director, you can be a playwright, you can be
designer,
whatever.
Yeah.
A designer.
Yeah. The International Thespian Society is like the organization that honors like student work through the theater. So I basically equate it to like National Honor Society, like for theater kids. Mm-hmm. And so different schools in different states have you charter a troupe. Mm-hmm. And you'll even see too, it's pretty cool. Like especially with the Tony Awards, I remember, was it Philippa Sue? She won for Hamilton, and thespians posted like, International Thespian from troupe, whatever, won her first Tony Award. And it was phrased as in from her high school theater thespian troupe, not like, you know, whatever prestigious school she went to or whatever. But yeah, so it was like cool that they celebrated her because she was a high school theater kid, just like the hundreds of thousands of other kids that are too. And it is truly international. I won't give like the, I won't say it's a lot of English speaking schools in other countries. So like we've gone to the international festival and it was like, oh, this troupe is from like somewhere in Asia. And all my students were like thinking that they were going to see like this. And like, this is not like, it was a lot of white kids. And it's like an English speaking school in Asia. And I'm like, well, so it is Alfred out there. And then we volunteer for the Indiana branch or the organization. And then each of our schools has our own separate troupe and you have a number and all that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
How early is too early for a kid to get involved in theater, or is there a age?
I don't think there's an age that's too early necessarily. I mean, it's just fun that they have like kids theater camps and everything like that, just to like, or even like little classes, just to something social to do, to go and at least hang out.
Well, so much of what kids already do at a young age is theater, like what they are doing, play acting. Mm-hmm. They have characters. Mm-hmm. Like my nephews were obsessed with Trolls and he would only let us call him Branch and all like the different names and stuff. And it was a whole phase we went through. But so much of what they already do is kind of their make-believe storytelling. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like Grant was saying, there are, or even like, you know, you send your kids to the YMCA summer camp and so many of the games they play are theater games. And it might not be a theater camp, but so much of this like applies to Boy Scout camps, Girl Scout camps. I don't know, daycare that is just trying to have like an educational moment, you know, how they teach first graders like kindness and sharing,
role playing and all of that. Know? Yeah.
So it's kind of a trick question because they kind of come out already reenacting well, and there wanting are to story
opportunities
tell.
Like, cause you know, I would always look for with the girls growing up, what kind of, whether it was a summer camp or mm-hmm. sometimes there was one place that did a theater class like every Saturday for 6 weeks kind mm-hmm. of things. Was
kind of thing around here.
Yeah.
Buck Creek would be the,
yeah. Buck Creek. I know my girls were involved at Buck Creek. Musical arts was a music studio, but they did like a little theater side session one time. And mm-hmm. So there's opportunity out there. Now, you get so much with your day job with this. Do you guys do anything in community theater yourselves at this time?
We have like kind of branched out here and there. There's a community theater group up in Avon that does like classes and things like that that I've helped out with. But just with our schedules and stuff. And I'm in graduate school night now too. So it just got to be too much.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But I will say, especially, you know, talking about royalties and all that, that there's a lot of publishing companies that are doing a really great job at, especially musical theater. Musical Theater, MTA, what does that mean?
Musical Theater International.
Musical Theater International, yeah. They do like Little Mermaid Junior, or they just did Finding Nemo Junior, and they've got these books and they've got all the words and how the kids learn how to read a script, and like they get to keep the book, and they've really, and they're just like 50-minute versions of the highlights of whatever cartoon mm-hmm. movie. Mm-hmm. There's Moana, there's everything you can think of. There's a junior version of the musical that you can't even really produce as a high school, let alone like a full length show, that are geared towards teaching kids how to do musical theater. Mm-hmm. So those are out there that like middle schools have done and such, that are like such easy resources. Cause most of the time the middle school theater teacher is not necessarily, they don't have the theater classes during the day. So it's like the English teacher, the math teacher, the choir teacher that may not have, you know, all the tools in their pockets yet, but the books and like the programming is really high quality for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of go back to answer the question of like, I would like to, but yeah, exactly. Like by the time
you need to sleep sometime.
Yeah. I mean, Carmel starts, so we don't start school until 9:05. So my final bell doesn't ring until 4:05, and I've got about a 40-minute drive home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the earliest
during rush hour
during rush hour, from the north side of the south. So the earliest I can get home is 5.
Yeah.
And so by that point, I am.
You're challenged exhausted. To be able to, if you're you're exhausted, like, then you got to, if you were to go someplace else to, for a rehearsal or.
Yeah, I've got to do.
Sets, you know, or something like that. You know, yeah.
We've got 3 dogs at home, so we've got to figure out exactly.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
The dogs at where, so, you know, and then with both of us being theater teachers, not only do we have our classes that we teach, but each part of our jobs also entails the after school portion, which where we're doing shows. So we've got rehearsals. Oh,
that's
after
true,
school.
Right?
You know, if you've got a rehearsal after school, a show. So like, we plan our schedules go around until each the other, evening. So that mm-hmm. we don't have, if we can't do a two.
That's I was going to ask. Do you guys time. Does it complement or does it clash at times with you guys both being high school teachers?
Most different schools. Of the time we're able to make it work. Yeah, it got a little hairy with Carmel because he kind of inherited the calendar already. But I mean, I tell people up until COVID, we planned our wedding around the musical schedule. Like we plan because it's like, not only is it just us and even my mom was like, Caitlin, you could move the musical. I'm like, but no, I really can't because when this happens, then we have a week to turn over. Then it's the choir concert. Right, and then 2 weeks later is always the band concert. Like it's literally all these puzzle pieces that like, I don't know what we're eating for dinner, but I can tell you when the next musical for the next 5 years is going to be because it's always the same weekend, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we make it work and it works out really well for the most part. But yeah, sometimes that's a hard part is our schedule and trying to figure out, okay, all right, we're doing this, but
yeah,
it works out really well.
Good. Are you a huge consumer
of theater?
Mm-hmm. Theater, film.
Well, we got really spoiled. So I say this with all the love in my heart, Carmel. I make fun of you all the time. But so at the end of last school year, I was saying how I wanted to plan a trip to take my students to New York and do the Broadway and the touristy things. And we had a company that I knew of. A friend of mine from college works there. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to do a New York City trip, spring break with Music Travels, like get this ball rolling. So then
fast forward,
he gets a job at Carmel. And he's meeting with Maggie and Andrew, who we talked about earlier. And he comes home over the summer and he goes, well,
so here's the thing.
They had already planned a New York trip themselves for fall break, and they just had an extra spot open for whoever got the theater job. And so I was like, I just want to clarify. So you've been working for Carmel for 20 minutes, and they're just
July. I haven't even started
giving
classes.
You're just being handed this trip to New York City. And he's like, can I go? I was like, yeah, you're going. Like, it's, right. You know, and it's part of the package.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The
yeah.
kids, you know, everybody that goes, part of what they pay is for the troop director to go or whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, here I am, like 7 years in, like, maybe this is the year that we could go. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So even though we didn't go together, I looked into like crashing his trip and just like getting my own flight and then staying there. And it was
not worth it.
It was like $800 round ticket. Yeah, I was like, yeah,
flight's horrible at that point.
I love that you sheepishly ask her, can I go?
Well, like, it's one of those things of like, we'd already had some stuff scheduled around that. Like there were a couple things. Cause I came back with a couple dates from there that I was like, all right, we gotta figure this out. But I also knew, I'm like, we have our schedule. Cause initially during our fall break, we had planned on going on a trip together, and doing something for the two of us.
Mm-hmm. So, because your fall break did happen to be during my fall break, right? Was that how it was?
I can't remember.
Either way.
I think my trip
got canceled and he went to New York.
Okay. So I came home. I was like, I know we already planned this thing, but I also have this. So
I've got this work obligation. I have to.
Total work.
Completely obligated so much. To go to New York and watch a bunch of teenagers.
Yeah.
And watch
some shows, we're probably the only couple like in recent history. It's like, yeah, we both went on a trip to New York City, not together, but with other people's children. And so he went in the fall and I went in the spring to New York and took students, which is always cool because, you know, they just,
they're seeing it through their eyes.
Oh yeah. It's so cool.
They're like a deer in headlights. So yeah. We're just like, city.
I know. I had the chance, when Angela was a senior, the foreign language, group on spring break went to France. And I got to go as a chaperone, and it was cool to see things through the kids' eyes.
And floated the idea out only to like the sophomores that went because it would just ruin everybody else's heart. But I'm like, maybe like a year from now, if like everything is good for me to like stay at Avon, like another year, what if we did a trip to like London and did the West End theater? And then we had a whole year to like fundraise. And it was like, thinking of hotel ticket, food,
it's probably
the same price as New York. It's just a longer flight. So we're just paying for the extra flight. And they're like, oh my gosh, could we do that? And I'm like, okay, we'll see how it goes. But
I mean, to be fair, Kaylin is also obsessed with London and wants to go back there. I love that constantly. City. Always my wants to go back favorite. There.
Yeah, but yeah, it was cool to take the kids. And then, you know, all the COVID precautions were lifted. So they didn't have to like take the mask on and off the whole time, which is great. And then I felt like comfortable taking them there. The kids aren't all going to come back super sick or, you know, something crazy is going to happen. So. But yeah, we had a great time individually, and the other stayed home with all the dogs.
That's appropriate. That's appropriate.
Yeah.
So one last question. I know we're going on here. We need to get to the final random question, but one last question for you. If you could choose an actor to play your life story, who would you choose?
Jack Black.
Oh my God, that is so good.
You are ready with that.
Oh, I'm there, man. I'm there. I'm ready for it.
I
love him.
Oh,
he's fantastic.
We've not seen the Mario Brothers movie, but all of my students will just be seeing like Peaches. Have you heard the song that he wrote about Princess Peach? Oh my gosh, you answered it so fast. You didn't give me a chance to think about it.
I had that one ready and waiting.
He's so talented. I mean, he comes across as likable, but he's extremely talented.
Oh yeah. It's
multifaceted.
Yes.
What TV show they did, they all showed up, the cast showed up from Mario Brothers and nobody told him. They told him that they were all wearing their costumes, like wearing some sort of costume. So he showed up dressed as like a Mario, his Mario, like a Halloween costume. It's like, they all told me we're wearing costumes and they did not wear a costume.
They did not.
Oh my God. I don't even know who would be. I don't know. I'd like to pretend that I'm like an elegant, like, actress, probably British, like Emma Watson, Florence Pugh, Emily Blunt. That could be a good one.
Yeah.
At their actual ripe age, wearing like a Maryville High School Letterman's jacket. Like, yeah, Dame Judi Dench.
Was it Judi Dench?
If you ever want a treat, you need to watch the movie. It's on Apple TV. It's Spirited. Where it's Will Ferrell. Are you familiar with this?
Oh, yes. We did watch it. Okay. We watched it over the holidays with Angela and Andrea.
Oh my gosh. In the middle of the song, they're dancing, and then like the one line is Judi Dench that walks by. Yes. Like, was that Judi Dench?
We were watching it the first time. Looked at each other.
We said, is that Judi Dench? And then Judi Dench? We all had a moment.
That's hilarious. Well, this has been great, but it's now time for the random question. So pick a card and pick a question. You answer it first, and we all have to answer it.
I'll let you pick Grant, which is terrifying, but.
Well, at least thinking.
Ooh, soundboard.
All right. We'll go with that one. If you could go back in time and meet your 10-year-old self, what advice would you give yourself?
Grant, what advice would you give yourself?
Keep going.
Oh my gosh, I was going to say that.
She just hit him, audience.
You can hear it.
Oh my gosh.
Just keep going. You've got it. It comes together.
Yeah.
But at 10 years old, I was also just like, I didn't. My little 10-year-old ADHD riddled adolescent mind.
Yeah.
It's all like...
Yeah, 10-year-olds, right?
All over the place. So, like, at that point, I was just like, living it up. Let's see what happens. But yeah, keep going.
Keep going. Caitlin, anything to add to that?
I was literally just going to say, like, keep living life. Keep going. And you said that. I'm like, gosh, this is, our brains are on the same wavelength sometimes. I think maybe something like just relax a little bit, like have more fun. Mm-hmm. I think I was very concerned about making sure I did all the right things and did everything right the first time. Especially like that I didn't get in trouble.
Yeah.
Like I'm still like
rule follower.
My treasurer, loves me at my high school. She's like, you follow all of the guidelines. I'm like, because I don't want the IRS to come get me and audit Avon Theater and money. And you know, and so just like, relax, you're doing okay. It's all right. Make a few more mistakes, I think.
Yeah. You learn so much more from mistakes than you do from doing all the right things.
Yeah.
And then you're also, you wind yourself up trying to be so straight and narrow, trying to be so proper with it. And then it's just kind of like, because I remember I did some of the same stuff there, but then eventually I let go and I said,
lean into who you are.
That extent, I mean, it could be argued that I leaned a little too far away from the straight and narrow path there, but you know,
the follow up podcast will be with your parents. You
know? I found my way back.
Mike, half voice Mike, do you have any advice for 10-year-old Mike?
Yeah, I've got two pieces of advice for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number one, you're not going to marry Tina. So just give up on that one. And pay a lot closer attention in English class. Yeah. Because you're going to write books. So you need to really make sure you pay attention in English class. It'll make your life simpler.
Yeah.
And your editor's life simpler too. Yeah.
My editor's life simpler.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, but even the best authors still need an editor.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
But at least it'd be simpler, right? They wouldn't have to teach me how to use an ellipse. So.
Or that's even what it's called, right? Yeah.
What's an ellipse? It's like a solar ellipse, a lunar ellipse. Okay. Close. So those two things, I mean.
That's what you tell 10-year-old you?
10-year-old Mike, give up on Tina. Yeah, you haven't really started following Tina yet, but.
He was obsessed with Tina. Yeah, that was his childhood obsession.
Yeah, for about 5 years. Yeah.
Tina went like a
I didn't tell her until Tina. Or a
neighbor.
I didn't tell Tina until I was about 30 that I had this crush on her when I was a kid. But yeah, that's a whole nother long story. But yeah, just give that up and then pay attention to English class and you'll be just fine.
Yeah.
So Nancy.
Well, instantly I thought about from The Help, you know, you is smart, you is kind, you is important. I thought I would probably tell 10-year-old Nancy, you're a lot smarter than you think you are. You're more capable. So go for what you said, go for it. Just don't hold back. You know, you're smarter, you're more important, you're more capable than you really think you are. So just lean into it.
And you're going to marry a really great guy.
Yes. Yeah. Really just the most awesome guy.
You right? may not be Tina, but you are a solid plan B.
It's always one to be a solid plan B.
To actually probably 12-year-old Mike, you would have been plan B, but yeah.
Well, this has been great fun. Thank you so much for coming on the Cutter Snatch podcast. Now we're at the end of the school year. What's coming up? Can you share anything that's coming up next year with your high schools for people to maybe that are in the area that might want to
yes.
look? Okay.
So we're not 100% on exactly what our fringe show is, but I'll be directing Puffs, which is a Harry Potter-esque parody show. That's pretty popular at the point at this time. So it's, roughly it's not really in the world of Harry Potter, but it is kind of like, again, it's just a parody of that.
Yeah.
And then Maggie will be directing Little Women in February.
Okay.
So then Puffs will be in November.
Okay. So fall shows Puffs and then shows. February is Little Women.
Yes.
All right. And Caitlin.
And we flip flop at my school. I do the musical and he doesn't. So we do a fall musical and we're going to be doing Anastasia, which is very weirdly people ask, is it just like the movie? I'm like, well, the story of her and Dimitri trying to get to Paris trick the queen. But then turns out she is Anastasia. That is in the Broadway musical. What's different is the bad guy is not the spirit of Rasputin and the little bat in the underground, which
is the most unfortunate
huge misstep.
Yes, it's an egregious error.
So, but it adds a really cool element of where the bad guy, if you will, is a Russian soldier who is chasing after Anastasia because he is avenging his father, who was a part of the killing of the Romanovs and like tore him apart and, and like, so it's very much like, generational trauma is like the bad guy and engulfed in this one person. But it is him like avenging his father and what he had to go through with the Romanovs. And now he's going to take care of Anastasia. So there's a lot more like psychological layers as opposed to like Rasputin, like trying to bring down the bad guy from the underworld or what he thinks is the bad guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it'll be really cool. Lots of ball gowns and old military uniforms. Yeah, and, you know,
well, and that's the one thing somebody told me one time that when they chose to retire, they wanted to retire close to a university because they could have reasonable entertainment, whether it be theater, sports, or what have you. But I think the same thing with high schools that you're around. There's a lot of great entertainment. And
my cousin and her husband live out in Philly, and they every time we get together, they're talking about this high school right down the road that does these crazy good shows. Not really big theater people. We just went to these shows. So we're just on a whim and we're like, what is going on?
They're like our age. Like they're denied at 29 years old is to go see like the High School Musical, you know.
They have no kids, no nothing.
Sure, no attachments to it.
They just show up at this high school and like, let's do it.
What a great support to the school what the kids are doing and such. So
Every community around high schools to go and support and see their shows, their sports, whatever, you know. I mean, do you have to do everything? No, because that's a lot. There's a ton of stuff happening at all the schools. But like, go and see a choir concert. Go and see a theater production. Go and see, you know, if you don't like it, you don't like it. That's it. You don't have to.
You're not out.
But just like, go and see it.
Yeah. $500 for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ticket.
I think it was like 2018. It must have been because that's when we were doing our referendum at Avon and to build voter support, because I guess, you know, statistics show that it's older communities that don't vote for referendums to pass because they don't have kids. So why would I want to put money in blah, blah, blah. It's a whole thing. And they explained this to us and they created at Avon, the gold card, cause we're black and gold anyway. So it's the gold card. And it was literally handed out to like 60-plus-year-old people of Avon. And it was like a free pass to anything you want to go to. You just had to call ahead of time to reserve your ticket if you needed to, whatever.
Yeah.
But it was a huge spike in elderly people that just were like, we're just going to come see what the play was this weekend, or we are just going to go.
What a creative approach.
There's a home basketball game, so let's go check it out. Like, and you know, it's kind of funny. Still to say, we have like, I like one grandparents who still has, we have 900 seats in the auditorium, and she'll still call me. I have my gold card. I need to reserve one ticket. And I'm like, I love that you think that we're selling out 900 seats every night. Get on in your grandma, you know, but, so yeah, it was like a way to just build. And so then they can actually see, and it's probably kind of guilt tripping. Like, you see these kids' faces. Are you going to tell them no? Like, you see what they're doing, and, you know, just to see what modern education looks like, you know, when they were in high school, it looks very different than what it is now. And so just to kind of connect them back to the community.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling my students, if we ever did like Fiddler on the Roof, I'm just going to get like the school buses to swing around like nursing homes and pick them all up. We'll do like an extra matinee, right? Like senior citizens matinee, because they'll eat
I think we've got some, we have some activities put on our calendars then this next fall and winter.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for joining us.
They've done such a nice job. I feel like we should
absolutely
give them a round of applause.
Oh, they liked me. They really liked me.
I'm ready for my close-up.
Well, this has been great fun. Thank you so much for joining us. People, please check out, go to the high school websites. You can see all the things that are going on at the various communities, but especially Avon and Carmel.
And your own. It's like, what's up the street? You never know. And the tickets are dirt cheap compared to, honestly, I think most high school theater tickets at this point are cheaper than going to see a movie.
Oh, I think
the
so too.
The cost of going to see a movie is like astronomical.
Yeah.
Definitely cheaper. Definitely cheaper than getting a Coke and a popcorn.
Oh, yeah. I'm still selling like a bottle of Coke for $1. You go anywhere. It's like $7. Right? Like, it's Great America, like Disney. But yeah.
Well, this has been fun with the dueling drama teachers. That's what I'm the moniker I've given you to. And thank you for listening, folks, to the Cutters and Knots podcast, putting up with myself and Half Voice Mike. He'll be back in full force the next time. But thanks to Bill for doing our post-production work. We appreciate all that you do. Thank you for listening. We look forward to talking to you on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast is available through most podcast listing providers. New episodes drop approximately twice a month. You can email Michael at authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Michael DeCamp is the author of two novels, Abandoned Hope, Cutter's Notch Book 1, and Nozomi's Battle, Cutter's Notch Book 2, a collection of short stories entitled Cutter's Notch Interludes, and one nonfiction Christian devotional book entitled Loving Out Loud, Learning to Love in a Hate-Filled World. All books can be found on Amazon or ordered from your local bookseller. Please join us again on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.